Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have a stunning and chilling story to share with you as told by Peggy Lochner Fisher. She writes, "My name is Peggy Lochner Fisher and my daddy died when I was 7 years old. Throughout my life, I have loved my daddy and always thought of him as my hero. After I saw the movie Unbroken, I began to start to get a glimpse into real war. My daddy's actual words of what he went through followed along the movie very closely. And I started writing this book to acknowledge history, to remember my stories as a 7-year-old, to hand down his story to his future generations, and to honor my daddy and family for what they all endured. This book was written from the heart, and I hope you enjoy Daddy Came Home." And it is an honor for me to introduce you to Peggy Fisher. So welcome to the network, Peggy.
Thank you, Pat. I'm very honored here to be able to speak about my dad, too. So I got to tell you, listening to what you just read, which is on the back of my book, it got to me emotionally. So thank you for introducing me.
Oh, you are welcome. And you know what? If we're emotional today, that's very much deserved and appropriate. So wherever we land is good, because this is an extremely important conversation that we're having today. And I think a lot of people don't know about this piece of history or realize the seriousness of it. Now, this is a tribute to your father, Earl Lochner, an American prisoner of war who survived the Bataan Death March. So before we get into your book, for those who may not know, just give us a peek into the horrors of Bataan.
Okay. My dad was transferred to the Philippine Islands, and Bataan is just a southern island in the Bataan Peninsula, there, the whole chain of islands there. And he went there, and they were actually there to protect the Filipino people to the Japanese coming in and trying to take over there. What happened, and this is the horror of all this, as they were there, their supplies dwindled, their medical supplies dwindled, their equipment was failing, everything was going wrong while they were there. That's when General Douglas MacArthur came in and surveyed it and said, "Yes, I will return and I will bring you all the things that you need there." Well, if you know anything about history, Douglas MacArthur did leave, but he didn't send the much, much needed supplies, equipment, and medical supplies that they needed. So dwindling with the food, with the health, with their things that they needed there, they were not highly equipped at that time. So when the Japanese started bombing Bataan, they were in a bad way. They were in a bad way. The gentleman who was in charge of the unit there made a statement. I should get his name there. I'll get that later. But he said, "If I do not give in to these Japanese at this time, we will see the worst atrocity in history," because they knew that the Japanese would just come in and take over. And that's exactly what happened. Yep. The Japanese came in, and the Japanese had no clue what they were getting into whenever they came to the island, because there were not only Japanese, they are fighting to take the island, but the Americans were there, the British were there, and the Filipinos. The Filipinos were a great group that was there fighting along with the Americans. So whenever the Japanese came in, we surrendered because we had to. They had no clue the mass amount of people they were going to deal with. And so when they came in, they were at the southern tip of Bataan. And the only thing they could think was to take these prisoners to the northern part of Bataan to a prisoner of war camp. And so they couldn't take this many people in trucks or whatever, so they said they had to walk it. So in my dad's own words, he said they set out on a walk that was 85 miles. It was very, very humid, very up in the 100 degrees. It was a tropical environment there. And along the way, many, many, many thousands of people died. In my dad's own words, that whenever somebody would stop or break rank to get away, they were either shot or bayoneted. And so there were a lot of people died on that route.
Just a horrible, ugly story. This was in April 9th, 1942, the U.S. surrender of the Bataan Peninsula on the main Philippine island, as you said. This was between 1939 and 45. Approximately 75,000 Filipino and American troops were forced to make that 85-mile march to prison camps, and they made this during intense heat, and as you said, they were subjected to harsh treatment by the Japanese guards, and so just thousands and thousands perished in what became known as the Bataan Death March. And during this time, then, there's basically two concurrent stories going on, one of your dad's journey and the other of your mom and your brother, and I imagine the entire family. So tell us about that. I don't know if you want to tell it from your dad's side, your mom's side, or how you want to weave that. But yeah, take us through that time period.
Okay, well, first of all, my mom and dad didn't realize when my dad left the States to go over to the Philippines that my mom was pregnant. So whenever the Bataan Death March was happening, back in the States, we had no clue what was going on. Nobody knew what was going on. But they did know after a while that my dad was missing in action. So as you said, they were taken over April 9th, and April 12th is when the death march started. So let me share what was going on with my mom. My mom was back here, and all they knew is my dad was missing in action. That's all they knew. Well, on May 21st, a little over a month later, my mom gave birth to my brother. And I think about the emotion, having my brother, not knowing if her husband was dead or alive.
Yep.
I just couldn't even begin to imagine what was going on. And what was interesting about this is my mom named my brother Earl after my dad, and she gave my brother the middle name of Douglas, only because Douglas MacArthur was who my dad was under.
Wow.
Not even knowing that Douglas MacArthur left the troops there in Bataan and headed to Australia and was not there to help them when they needed it.
Oh, my.
So if I get back to when my dad was missing in action, along the death march here, I got to say this too, he had an opportunity to drive truck for the Japanese. They were going along and they needed a truck driver. So my dad was taken out, and he was the truck driver. My dad was just a little guy, so he was transporting Japanese up and down the mountains. And so as he was transporting them up and down the mountains, he saw the terrible atrocities and the dead people that were on this path. So he would go up and down the mountain transporting the Japanese. Well, there was an opportunity that he had to escape. He had some ailments himself with the dysentery and malaria and all kinds of other items. And there was a Filipino boy who took my dad, put him in a cart, and was going to take care of him and took him to the local, well, it wasn't local, it was a little distance there, to the hospital. Now, while my dad was in the hospital for 3 months, the Japanese people took care of my dad. The Filipino people took care of my dad. And when the Japanese came in to check out the hospital, the Filipino people wheeled my dad into the delivery room and pretended that he was a woman having a baby.
Oh, wow.
So to this day, I have so much respect for the Filipino people. Because had it not been for that boy and the people at that hospital, my dad would, that was one of the things, he wouldn't have made it.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
Now, there was a time after he had been there 3 months that the Japanese came in unannounced to the hospital. And my dad was laying on a gurney. And so they went up to him, and the Filipino people came over and said, no, he was Filipino. And they were going to listen to them. However, they found his dog tags. and they realized he was an American. So at that time, they took him out, and then he was taken by ship over to Kobe, Japan, which is where he remained as a prisoner of war.
No words for that, right?
No words. No words at all. Mm-mm. And I have a son who lives over in Hawaii, so we've got to visit him several times. And I run into a lot of Filipino people. And my family thinks I'm a little nuts because I go up to them and I talk to them to see if they happen to be from the Philippines. I share my dad's story, and I'm just so grateful to speak to them about their country and about their people. And a lot of times I shove them, you know, $5 or something and say, thank you for your heritage. Thank you for your Filipino people. I will forever be grateful to what your people did for my dad.
Absolutely. And Peggy, you wouldn't be here if that young boy didn't care for your dad, because you were born after this, right?
That is so true.
Yep.
I was born after. I was born in 1949. He had been home 4 years when I was born.
And something I found fascinating is that what your family didn't know, that he was dead or alive, and then his picture appeared in Life magazine?
Yes, yes. That's another thing that's just such a blessing to my family. Now, of course, this is 1942 that the death march started. My dad was missing in action. It wasn't till the February edition, February 1944, that my family opened up a Life magazine and saw that picture of my dad in there.
Unreal.
Now, if you look at the picture, you'll know the people had guns around.
Mm-hmm.
So we really believe that was before Bataan was taken over. But any kind of hope at all that my family had in knowing that he could possibly be alive, they were very grateful.
Unbelievable. That was like a slice of crazy when I saw that. I can't imagine being a family member worried about this loved one and then opening a magazine and seeing a picture. It, again, just totally beyond words. So then your dad survived. He came home. And then what happened?
Okay, he was a prisoner of war in Kobe, Japan for 3.5 years. And he found out from the people on the dock, which were Koreans, I believe, that said the war was coming to an end. And that's exactly what happened. The war came to an end, the party came on and took our prisoners, and my dad came back by boat and by plane to San Francisco, and he had to take a train over to Pittsburgh, which is where we're from. And my mom met my dad with my brother, who at this time was 3.5 years old. They met him at the train station, and you probably saw that picture, which another thing that touches my heart, where my dad reached over to kiss my brother for seeing him the very first time.
I know. Did he even know your brother was born?
He did.
Okay.
He did. But my brother had to be 2 years old or so before he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not know my mother was pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is what, you know, it was a big adjustment when my dad came back, because not only did he bring all the atrocities and stuff that he witnessed in war, but he also had a 3-year-old son. And anybody that knows a 3-year-old son, they know that's a crazy age. And my brother was, you know, because of everything that was going on, I don't think there was a strong discipline there in the house.
Right.
So my brother was a little crazy.
That's completely understandable. That had to have been a really stressful time for your mom, trying to raise a little one, and then your dad comes home and I'm sure he has PTSD and other health issues that didn't lend him to being on top of things all the time. So what a rough time. So then you were born and your dad passed away when you were 7.
Right. I always tell everybody when I give these presentations that, you know, life went on, everything was fun, and then the biggest excitement of their life came when I was born. So because my dad wasn't around when my brother was born, my mother let my dad name me. So he named me after my grandparents, which was Margaret after my grandmother. My pup-up's name was Clyde, but they named me Claudette. So My dad named me Margaret Claudette Lochner. Things went along. My dad worked for the post office. He was an ambulance driver. He was the president of the fire company. He got very, very involved in our community, which is Pitcairn, which is north of Pittsburgh there. But anyway, everything went along well until the fateful day of October 6, 1956, which I remember. I was only 7 years old, but I remember it as clear as day when my dad took me up to my grandparents to stay overnight, which was normal. My dad would go off to the Eagles to play cards and drink beer, and my mom would go to bingo. And in the middle of the night, I'll never forget, I heard commotion down at my grandparents' house, and I, being a seven-year-old, ran down to see what was going on, and they shooed me back upstairs. While I was standing upstairs as a typical seven-year-old, I listened to hear what was going on down there that was such a commotion. And I heard the words, "Earl died." And in a seven-year-old's mind, I remember thinking, wow, Earl died. Now, if I had a choice, which one was to die, which one would I pick? And I thought I would pick my brother. And shortly after that, my papa brought me downstairs, put me on his lap, and shared with me that my dad had gone to heaven. And my dad was 40 years old. He had a massive coronary. They said there could have been 100 people around his bed, and no one could have. And the undertaker did tell the family that he had never seen a more brutalized body.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Heartbreaks.
That's why he'll always be my hero, because what I know and the words I have in the book that came from one interview that he gave when he came back, I know without a doubt that is probably 10% of what really went on.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any way of totally retelling that, and you probably wouldn't want to have somebody go through that, and you probably wouldn't want to hear it either. I can't even begin to imagine. So now, what prompted you to write the book? Had you thought about this all along, or what was the catalyst that said, I need to share this and get this out?
Okay. First of all, throughout my whole life, I had an emptiness in my heart that I didn't have my dad. And even when I got married, you know, my stepfather walked me down the aisle. It just wasn't the same. And even my husband and I had a photography business for 20 years. One of the most difficult things for me to do was to photograph the father-daughter dance. My husband would be on one side, I'd be on the other. We'd start taking the pictures. And 9 times out of 10, because of the emotion that went on with the father and daughter there, I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
I couldn't deal with it, so I would leave that to my husband, Mike, and he handled that. So I always had these emotions about my dad. I'm 68 years old, and he died when I was 7. So for 61 years, I've always had these emotions. Here, a couple years ago, when the movie Unbroken came out, which was a true story written by a former POW in Japan. And I said, okay, I'm going to go see this. So my husband and I went and to know different stories or hear different stories throughout my life. Yeah, I went, yeah. But to sit in a movie theater with a gigantic screen, seeing the atrocities that the Japanese did to these POWs, it ripped my soul. And I sobbed. I sobbed through the whole thing. And I think that was the first time I learned what real war was about. Mm-hmm. And thinking my dad in those particular situations, I was the last one out of the theater. And I came out of the theater and I thought, you know, I have all this memorabilia and all this stuff pertaining to what my dad went through. At that time, I was 66. I thought, I'm 66 years old. If I don't do something soon, once I'm gone, this is all going to be gone and it'll be gone forever. Now, I don't consider myself an author, but I was moved. I feel there was divine intervention through all of this that touched my heart, that said, you need to do this. You need to do this. So I started typing on the computer. One thing led to another to another. That's how this book all came about. I found somebody who would work with me to critique what I was doing, and to get it ready to be printed. And that's been like that. I have over 600 books out in circulation, something starting out to just do this to give to my two sons. I have two sons and I have two granddaughters. I wanted my dad's legacy to stay alive. And originally I thought, okay, I'll put this book together so my sons, my grandbabies, and future generations would know what my dad went through. Mm-hmm. And that's how it all happened.
Well, bless you for doing that. It must have been difficult.
Thank you. It brought up a lot of emotions. Mm-hmm. It brought up a lot of emotions. And it also, it made me aware that don't underestimate what a seven-year-old thinks or remembers. Because they were strong memories that came back to me, even up to when my dad was laid out and how I had to behave and going to the full military honor at the cemetery and the guns and the taps and all that. That was very strong in my memory. But it also was very strong for me to know that my dad loved me, and also the fact that for as long as I live, he will always be my hero.
Oh, making me cry too. Wow. So let's talk about the process, and was there much research that went on, and did you meet others who endured this travesty?
Well, what happened, there was a man by the name of Captain Locke, L-O-C-K-E, who lived in Connecticut. Throughout my life, I would try to reach out to other POWs to find out what my dad went through and do all this. And I sent many, many, many letters out throughout my life. And I did have this gentleman, Captain Locke, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he said he wanted to meet me. So he drove down with his wife from Connecticut down to Grove City here, and we met. He touched my heart big time. He gave me memorabilia. His name was Locke, and our name was Lochner. Mm-hmm. They were always close to each other in many situations in the POW camp. So he shared a lot of information, and I used a lot of that information and also what he told me about when they were in the POW camp. One of the things he told me about was they weren't far from Hiroshima when the bomb was dropped. And he said when the bomb was dropped, the Japanese didn't know what to think. And even when the Japanese were bombing Kobe, Japan, where my dad was, the Japanese would force the prisoners out to lay on the ground to look up and watch as the Americans were bombing. Now, one thing Captain Locke said to me, he said, I got to tell you this. He says, if you tell anybody this, you must tell them also that the POWs didn't mind because they knew the Americans were dropping the bombs. But to them, they said the Americans were coming to get them. So they were touched by that. But anyway, he was saying about when the bomb was dropped at Hiroshima, they saw a fallout that was coming over. And he told me when it came on top of them, he said they put their hands up and they could see through their hands. And he later told me, now this was many years ago that he told me this, and I was in my 40s, I think, at that time. He said to me, what we're finding out that a lot of the offspring from these POWs that went through this are surfacing with cancer. And he said, you might want to be checked. So I called the VA nearby me, and I said, is there any truth to any of this? And they said, we can have you come down here and be scanned, that they had heard that also. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, I thought, what am I going to do? If I find out I have something like this, what can I do? So I said, forget it. I'm going to let it go. However, they cautioned me to say, it could skip generations. Mm-hmm. And knowing I have two sons and two granddaughters, that's what broke my heart.
Yeah.
And we'll never know that.
No.
And, you know, I have a six-year-old and a three-year-old, and my oldest son's 43 and my youngest son's 36. And thankfully, nothing has surfaced. Mm-hmm. And I pray that it won't.
You know, we look back on that and then it makes you wonder, are we still in a place in this world where this could happen again?
Oh, my. It scares me.
Yeah.
It scares me. I have a faith in God, and that's the thing that keeps me going because, you know, I just had a thing on Facebook today from a friend who was a Vietnam vet, and he said, I'm ready to give up. And, you know, and that's because he has a lot of PTSD from Vietnam.
Sure.
And I think, oh, my, you know, if I didn't have a faith knowing that there is somebody bigger than me that's walking, that's taking care of all this, I probably want to throw my hands in the air a long time ago, too.
No. I don't know. I'm just kind of at a loss for words right now. Yeah, this is such a huge story. And as you say, it affects generations and generations. And
right.
I'm just proud that you were able to put this together to share it, not only with your family, but for other people who don't know about this.
Thank you. And that is true. I was pleased back when my youngest son was in seventh grade. They were doing history reports, and they gave a list of different events they could talk about. And the Bataan Death March was on there. Which I was
wowed.
And my son, of course, he gave his report on there. I've done many presentations on this. When my two sons were younger, I insisted they come and listen to all this, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is real history. This isn't fake. This isn't anything. Because I use my dad's own words on there. I want to share what actually happened. Because they say, if you don't remember your history, you have a chance of repeating it.
To repeat it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow, well, exactly. So what a gift to humanity that you put this together. What has been the feedback? So as people read your book, what do you hear from them?
Oh. Well, everything's been excellent, excellent. I didn't write this book to get sympathy or anything like this. I wrote it to keep my dad's legacy alive. I had one negative thing. There was another gentleman whose father was in a POW camp. And he's read my book, and he liked my book, but he said to me, Peggy, you never should have done that. I said, why? He said, well, you know how people were questioning whether there was a Holocaust? He said, I don't want them to call our dads liars and say this didn't happen. I said, I'm sorry. I come from another side of that. This is the truth, and I am putting out the truth.
Oh my gosh, as if somebody's going to make something like this up, huh?
Right. Well, look what they're saying about people who went through the Holocaust.
I know.
I mean, that wasn't made up. And there's still people that are saying it's all lies.
Well, you're going to always have crazies on the other side of
right.
the truth. So, you know, you just plow forward with what you know is right.
That's what I'm doing. And so far, I mean, people are still, after 2 years, they're still wanting me to come give presentations. And I still go off to vendor shows and give the story there. And, you know, so here I am, 68 years old, and I'm still able to talk about my dad who died when I was 7 years old.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, and it's a gift to him, to you, your family, and to everyone who comes in contact with you. I feel blessed to have met you. I was very excited to have this conversation and learn from you today. And so with that in mind, where can folks go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase this book?
Okay, I do have a website, which this is another blessing, that a classmate of mine does websites, and he said, Peggy, I'll do it for you for free, because he liked what I was doing. So my website is www.daddycamehome.com. On Daddy Came Home, you will see pictures, you will see the information about the book. You can purchase the book. You can download it on a Kindle if you want to do that, or you could request the hard copy, which the request comes to me, and I send it out at that time. Now, also on the website, there is a 25-minute documentary that a friend did interviewing me about this whole big situation there. And there's more than what happened even after the book. If you do the documentary, you'll see that after I printed the books and got those out, I had interaction with Japanese people who actually came to a Bataan Death March museum, who came to offer an olive branch and to also give $50,000 to the museum. That was an emotional thing for me too, but that's also on the documentary. There's also newspaper articles about all that information. It's on the website. It has a lot of food for thought on the website there.
Absolutely. I watched that documentary, and I would suggest everybody watch that. It was excellent. The website is daddycamehome.com. My family's from Pittsburgh. My dad's from the Pittsburgh area. And so when I first came across your website and I saw Daddy, I'm like, this person's probably from Pennsylvania somewhere, because they call their dad Daddy. And I just thought that was kind of neat.
Wow.
A little bit of connection.
I am honored to be able to share my dad's story, as I do every time. And I will until I take my last breath.
Absolutely. I agree with you. DaddyCameHome.com. Peggy, any final words before we say goodbye?
Well, I would just like to say, if anybody is in the same situation I was in, not even at my age, younger people, that they have their relatives who went through difficult times, I think it's healthy for people to talk about things. I think it's also very important that we know what real history is all about. And I would say, get and talk to them and find out what your family went through. Because even though I thought I knew, until I dove into this, I had no clue.
And everybody now is texting and looking at their phones and not really finding out this rich history and heritage. So it does get lost. I think now more than ever, your message that you just said is extremely important, that we take time to have these conversations with our family members and share our history, our oral history, and write it down and get it out there.
That is so true. And I'm so thankful that my dad gave one interview, and only one interview, when he arrived home, because I used that interview in my book. Me writing the book would mean nothing, but having his own words in there, that to me made it so authentic and real.
Absolutely. Wow. You are truly an amazing woman. I am honored to have met you, and just to find out a little bit about your dad, who fought for our country and went through all of that for our country. So God bless you. God bless our troops. God bless America. And everyone head over to daddycamehome.com. Peggy, you are amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You touched my heart. And thank you for giving me this opportunity.